Produced by PI Media.
On March 23rd, 2022, individuals working at the most important defense research institutes in Russia all received variations of the same email. The subject line referenced, quote, persons under U.S. sanctions for invading Ukraine, end quote, from the target's organization. The body of the email contained a link which appeared to come from the Health Ministry of Russia and an attached document with the Health Ministry's name and logo at the top. That same day, an unknown entity operating out of the Belarusian capital of Minsk received an email titled U.S. Spread of Deadly Pathogens in Belarus. It, too, contained a document with Russia's Ministry of Health branding at the top. In every case,
when the victim downloads the malicious document to their computer and double-click on it, the infection chain begins.
Hi, I'm Ran Levy. Welcome to the Checkpoint Research Podcast. When Itai Cohen, head of research at Checkpoint, discovered those malicious emails alongside his team, it was clear right away that this was no ordinary phishing campaign. The victims were specific, highly targeted, and you'll know why once you know a little more about them.
Yeah, so Rostec is a huge corporation.
Alexandra Goffman, threat intelligence analysis team leader at Checkpoint.
Inside Rostec, there are a few holding companies. Each one is responsible for some other kind of a specific industry. So the victims here were research institutes who were part of the holding, which handles all kind of radioelectronic solutions and electronic warfare.
Rostec is the kind of organization that possesses a lot of interesting secrets, the kind that might be valuable to any government or military, which explains why their attackers put in the work to craft their social engineering to such a degree as they did. To firstly target not just the organization, but particular people within it.
We managed to track some specific people that were targeted. I would say that these people, judging by their positions, should have access to sensitive information.
Then, to send not just ordinary emails, but specifically crafted emails relating to those people's immediate concerns.
Rostec is under various sanctions, both from the US and from European Union. And the social engineering trick that was done here is that the documents had the titles related to the sanctions against the specific research institutions inside the Rostec. So it was the subject which was very important for these institutions at the time, so they just used it at the right time.
All it took was a double click for the infection chain to begin.
The infection chain starts by Word, Microsoft Word, opening the document, and automatically the program tries to download an external template, which is a piece of code for Microsoft Word that the attacker embedded in this malicious document. Now, when the code is executed, then the malware begins to run.
Step one.
So the malware begins with a loader component. The loader component is a piece of software that's responsible for loading a next stage payload in a way that will make it hard for security analysts or for security software to detect the attack.
The loader makes malware difficult to detect by hiding it under layer after layer of encryption.
Imagine an onion or something like this. So the inside of this, like the loader contains the payload, but it's encrypted. And to reveal it, it should decrypt several layers of encryption. And only then you can realize that you're actually looking at the full backdoor inside.
The onion prevented host machines from detecting that backdoor, though it wasn't much of a hurdle for the researchers.
because usually the code of the loader contains the instructions how to decrypt the next stage layer, and then we just follow the trails of encryption and decrypt all the layers until we reveal the final payload.
The really tricky part was that backdoor inside the loader.
This backdoor was heavily obfuscated. This means that it was very, very hard for us as reverse engineers to reverse engineer the backdoor. Yeah, it was a mess, basically.
What is obfuscation?
Usually when a software developer writes a code, piece of code, they write it in a logical way. So each line of code brings to the next line and so on. There is an order of instructions to execute. But when we're looking at obfuscated payload, what we are seeing is that the code is jumping all over the place. We don't really understand what will be executed next. So sometimes things does not make sense. Sometimes we are jumping to the start of the code while we expect it to be in another place.
Obfuscating the code makes it harder for humans to read, but makes almost no difference for the computer who executes it.
So it's very hard for us to understand, and there is some mathematical expressions inside and mathematical conditions that we need to understand in order to really figure out where will the code eventually go and what will be executed. And only then we can understand what the payload does.
But actually writing code like that would have been as difficult as, say, writing a book with no order to the paragraphs.
So they develop a code which was completely logical. The backdoor itself was completely logical. And when compiling the software, the malware, they applied the obfuscation using a tool called LLVM Obfuscator. Now, this obfuscator is an open source obfuscator, so it's something you can find online. And this is what makes the code during compilation process much more complex.
The analysts had to dedicate a lot of time and effort to decoding the jumbled mess that was the backdoor's code.
So slowly but steadily, we reverse engineered the backdoor and revealed the functionality that I described before.
Finally, they could see it all clearly laid out before them.
What the malware does is providing full access to the attackers on the victim's machine. This means that it will allow the attacker to download new components, new malicious components, to steal files, sensitive files or private files. It can collect information about the computer, about some properties in the computer, and basically giving the attacker full control on the victim.
In the end, all those tactics and tricks didn't just serve to annoy cyber defenders. They were useful for keeping the malware and its authors behind the veil of secrecy.
Considering the fact that it was heavily obfuscated, the fact that there was a multi-stage loader with layers of encryption, it makes it harder for people like us, for reverse engineers, for intelligence analysts and other security vendors to find such attacks.
Though this particular offensive, with the sanctions-based social engineering emails, was quite new, the broader campaign the researchers discovered was quite mature already.
We know for sure that this malware was in development at least since March 2021. So it's not something really new, it's just something that was under the radar all this time.
There are only a limited number of entities in the world with the motive to spy on an organization like Rostec, the intelligence to identify individuals with access to sensitive information within Rostec, and the resources to craft a campaign of convincing social engineering and sophisticated malware. Most of the entities that fit the bill are nation-state APTs.
So usually when we analyze a campaign or cluster of attacks, we are trying to understand whether this cluster of activity is related to a group that we discovered in the past or other vendors, other security vendors discovered in the past. And in this case, we've seen multiple overlaps that this cluster of activity has with different threat actors, Chinese threat actors. So the funny thing is that once you analyze many campaigns by China, by Chinese threat actors, you quite quickly recognize the patterns. So this is what we call TTPs, right? So the tools and the techniques used, for example, what a DLL hijacking, DLL sideloading is a technique that was used by the malicious document and loader.
DLL hijacking takes advantage of how Windows programs handle dynamic link library files. Hackers can use it to trick applications into calling and loading their own malicious code.
It's something very popular among Chinese threat actors.
Despite Chinese fingerprints all over it, the exact identity of the perpetrators behind this campaign isn't clear.
In case of Chinese actors, it's pretty complicated process to attribute the operation to the specific group because Chinese actors tend to share a lot of their tools, share their knowledge, and reuse the things that others had done before. So we still don't know to which exact intelligence agency, for example, this activity belongs to.
With no definitive links, Checkpoint came up with a new name for this APT, Twisted Panda.
The name Twisted came from the Twister game, I think called Twister. And this is because that when we are looking at the obfuscated code of the backdoor, it was, as I said, a mess. It was all over the place, and like this was the reference that we came up with.
I think for me personally, the most interesting thing here was actually the subject of a Chinese industrial espionage, because we've heard so many stories coming from the West about that and all the attempts to block the Chinese products in American markets, in Canadian markets. We kind of got used to that. And also we used to the concept of the West trying to hack Russia and Russia trying to hack the West. So here it's a bit different story.
Generally, in recent years, Russia and China have been steady allies, combining forces against their shared adversaries in America and Europe. And yet,
in the last few years, we see some kind of spike in the Chinese activity, especially in the Eastern Europe and in Russia. There were a lot of different cases that were analyzed by different researchers, starting from the cases very similar to ours in terms of the initial infection when the phishing email was sent to one of the submarine designers in Russia, and this activity was also attributed to a Chinese group. There were multiple others.
China's targeting of Russian industry goes even beyond just cyber espionage.
There were enough cases in Russia when scientists were actually arrested on suspicion of all kinds of espionage. And surprisingly, it's not only for the US or for the West, it's also for China. All these cases are usually top secrets.
But why would China be spying and actually attacking its ally? On one hand, it's no surprise, and China is hardly unique. Ever heard the story of Crypto AG, where the United States spied on over 70 countries worldwide, including some of its close allies? If not, maybe you've heard of one of the many other times the NSA has cyber-spied on countries indiscriminately, friends and foes.
That's basically what happens, and in this world it seems like everyone just spying on everyone.
China's motives for targeting Russia, however, are quite specific.
China's main priority for the last few years is the technological advancement, and they are increasing their military power. So they do everything, and all their 5-year plans, 10-year plans are based on the steps how to achieve this advancement. And they apparently, in addition to all kind of collaborations that they do with scientists all over the world, the espionage is a part of this plan. So Russia is much more advanced than China in some of the sectors, including, for example, the everything that related to naval operations or to aviation and avionics. And in this specific case, for example, the research institutions that were targeted their primary focus was actually development of highly technological radio-electronic solutions, electronic warfare, and this is precisely the type of data that Chinese guys need in order to have their technological advancement.
And we need to remember the context here, because there is currently, as we record this podcast, a war between Russia and Ukraine, and China might see it as an opportunity to collect more information about military equipment from the field and not something that was not used in battlefield, right? So it's much more valuable now.
Whether Twisted Panda succeeded or not in this campaign, and the degree of any damage they caused or information they stole, remains unknown.
The one thing that we can share here is that we keep seeing them constantly trying. So from one point, it means that probably some of these operations were not successful or just didn't last long enough, I mean in the victim systems. And from another point of view, it means that what they're looking for is important enough in order to be persistent and try again and again.
That's it for this episode. Thank you for listening. For more episodes of our podcast, visit research.checkpoint.com. Checkpoint Research Podcast is a PI Media production, written and produced by Nate Nelson, narrated by me, Ran Levy, with sound design by Yotam Halachmi. Bye-bye.